One semester, I failed a really important test because of my anxiety. And for me, I have a single mom who's working super hard to make sure that I graduate. It's making you so anxious to the point of like, quote unquote, paralysis, you know, like you just can't do anything. A lot of us live with a survival mentality, not a thriving mentality. Mental health does not discriminate. Let me just put that out there. But especially in Black communities, there's a sense of resilience and just an acceptance of poor living conditions that we've been conditioned to accept because it's synonymous with being Black and being poor. I'm an introvert. Like, one of my favorite things is being at home with my book or like...
But let me put you up there. If you're an introvert, how did you find yourself in a space where you're going to compete for being Miss South Africa? What's up, everybody? Welcome to the internationally nominated, internationally recognized podcast, The Don't Hold Back. This is your host, Nozibele Kamgana Mayaba. Listen, there's something about COVID that elevated conversations around mental health and left us with questions such as, what can we do better? Today in studio, I'm actually like gold fanning right now, but I'm trying to keep it together and very professional. Okay. I have a very special guest. She's a former Miss South Africa, an author and mental health advocate. Please help me welcome Shudu Fatso, Shudu Musida. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, let me just first say this. The pictures don't do you justice. Okay. You are more beautiful in person. I'm actually shook. Right now.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I didn't even.
No. You are beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much.
I remember when you were crowned Miss South Africa, and I thought to myself, yes, she is gorgeous. And with every picture, with every, you know, interview that I've watched, and obviously connecting with the person that you are, what you stand for, you're beautiful inside out.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That's literally what I tell children all the time, that they're beautiful inside and out. So to hear it, for me, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for making it today.
Thank you.
So before we get into some of the discussions of today, you know, it is a tradition for a guest to bring in a snack. I'm not going to say what it is. Please tell us what you brought, for today, but also don't go into the why. We'll go into that much, later. Just tell the guest, what did you bring?
I brought coffee.
There you go. Can I just say also it's Black. No sugar. So it's going to be a long day. Shudu, I started talking, you know, about mental health, and I know you're a big mental health advocate. You know, understanding how the pageant works, Miss South Africa, there's one particular focus that as a Miss South Africa you need to have. What made you choose mental health?
My initial focus actually was educational and economic empowerment, mm-hmm. and honestly still is. But what I found during the pageant and when I had to speak about something that was true to me, it was mental health, because that's the foundation of everything. It was important for us to not reach at the macro challenges and start focusing on the micro challenges that make the bigger picture. So when 2 days before I was in the final of Miss South Africa, I called a friend of mine and I'm like, I need a statement that basically encapsulates who I am and what I stand for. And then my friend was like, you know what? Speak from the heart. Yeah. And at that time, I was working in different communities, you know, different organizations to get basic needs to mm-hmm. people, because COVID hit so many people so hard, but some people didn't even have basic needs such as food, water, etc. But what you found was consistent in all the communities was the fact that no one was addressing their mental health challenges, where you are being given a food pack for a month. But after that month, what happens? Mm-hmm. You know, and those are mothers. Those are children. So I just decided to speak about something that was true to me, and it was mental health, because I saw how taking care of my mental health changed my life and how mm-hmm. it allowed me to have fertile ground in my mind to build new ideas and to use my agency to create a better life for myself.
Mm-hmm. Is there one particular personal story regarding mental health that you have, that not only it was obviously inspired by where you come from, the community that you worked with, what is it about your journey also that clicked for you that, wait a minute, this is something that I may be struggling with, this is something all I need to take care of? Is there that personal story for you?
I was in university and I was studying a philosophy, politics and economics degree. And one of my core modules was statistics. So what happened with statistics, I had the greatest, one of the greatest lecturers. It was a fundamental one that if you fail it, you can't graduate. Like, that's how important it was. So you're in a class with actuarial science students, PPE students, economics students, stats students, and everyone is struggling. And I'm not even like, you know, like, I'm not even in one of those like stats or core econometrics and whatever, but I need this to pass. So you are walking around and people are repeating the year again because of this module. And now all of us are anxious. Even when you're in class, you feel like you don't understand anything. And then I remember I started getting really anxious, like to a point where I couldn't understand anything. Before every exam, you can't even study because your mind is blocked. You're just too anxious to even try anything. And you see how everyone is like super discouraged around you, and they know that if they fail this for the third time, they're going to get academically excluded. Mm. One semester, I failed a really important test because of my anxiety. Yeah. And for me, I have a single mom who's working super hard to make sure that I graduate. So it's like you have all these things riding on this one thing, but it's making you so anxious to the point of like, quote unquote, paralysis, you know, like you just can't do anything. And I stopped going to school for 2 weeks. I remember in the first few days, I was like, I need to just calm down because I'm basically a decoration in class because I can't even absorb anything they're saying because I'm too anxious because of it. Mm-hmm. And I decided, let me go try a therapy. This is 2018.
Okay.
And I went to a therapist who's still my therapist today.
Yeah.
And we started speaking about the roots of anxiety and how a lot of us, not in so many words, but I understand better now, a lot of us live with a survival mentality, not a thriving mentality. So what happens is whatever decisions we make are based off of survival.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you feel like you can't survive, you just get a mental blockage and you become super anxious because you're too scared to try. And like during that time, I was in therapy and then I decided to self-study, which is something I've always done. So I decided to self-study one of the hardest subjects, got a tutor once a week who would basically confirm that I'm on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for 2 weeks and then I'd go to class and tutorials just to make sure that I'm also on the right track with the class. So I self-studied for 3 months, moved from 35% to 97%, all because I had someone who just let me know that I could do it.
Yeah.
And I took care of my mental health. So I literally got in my final exam one question wrong.
For stats.
And then my lecturer, like, to this day, she's honestly one of the most supportive people in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't spoken to her in years, but she wrote a recommendation letter when I explained to her, because I went to look at my test. She's like, you only got one thing wrong. You're in the top 10% of the class right now. And then I explained to her, like, what happened to me was this. So she wrote a letter explaining that I was struggling with very bad anxiety.
Yeah.
And that is the reason I got that mark. And whoever wants to get me into a class or a university or a job, I am capable of doing those things. So also having the support of teachers as well. So when I was thinking about a moment that changed my life and made me believe in myself, it was that, because I knew that when my mind is in the right place, I can literally do something that seems impossible.
I relate with what you're saying so much because I panic a lot, and I've actually seen that it's more in my head than actually what the task is about.
Yeah.
And once I literally talk myself, I was like, calm down. It's okay. It's not as hard as you think it is. And once I overcome that, and then I'm on the other side. I was like, well, that wasn't that bad. It's just that my anxiety and my panic just got the best of me.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, like, I think it's actually going to help me moving forward, because I'll be very honest, I still struggle with that. On my best days, I'm not calm at all.
Yeah.
And what you said about being on survival mode, I think it's because of how we also grew up. We didn't grow up in the best conditions or in the best circumstances. So that it's hard for you to reprogram yourself once you're an adult to actually realize, hang on a sec, you are not that little girl anymore, fighting to be heard, fighting to be seen. You've overcome that. So thank you for saying that. Thank you for recognizing that. Thank you for explaining it better than I would have, actually. I wanted to also touch base on, you mentioned some of the communities that you've worked with. And I come from the Eastern Cape in Port Elizabeth, Gqeberha. And one of the things that I've struggled with is explaining like what mental health is and some of the challenges that people experience when it comes to mental health. Because, you know, it's a different generation between my mom and I. My mom had me when she was 42. So when I start explaining that I'm not okay, I, you know, I'm struggling mentally and stuff like that, it does not click at all. It's like, Uyagula, are you sick? Should I take you to the hospital? No. It's a different kind of challenges that I'm experiencing. Have you found growing up in Limpopo as well? Do you find also there's still people that do not understand what we mean by mental health?
Yes. So just to start, the World Health Organization defines health as a complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being, not just the absence of disease and infirmity. So you don't have to be like, I'm dying,
yes,
for you to be sick, for you to not be okay, for you to be unhealthy does not need for you to be coughing. Just to clarify that. But the thing about those communities is that, especially those Black communities specifically, mental health does not discriminate. Let me just put that out there. But especially in Black communities, there's a sense of resilience and just an acceptance of poor living conditions that we've been conditioned to accept because it's synonymous with being Black and being poor. But the truth is, it does not have to be that way. Mental health has always existed, but we don't have the language for it because, you know, resilience has been framed as a thing where when someone is struggling with anxiety or starts struggling with depression and it's evident physically, then they're defined as crazy or there's like witchcraft associated to it. But we never really want to speak about the root of the problem. What I found growing up was everyone who I was told was crazy when I was growing up, now that I'm older and I know their stories, I'm like, oh,
yep,
that person was in an abusive marriage and they became depressed and then this and this happened, but they never really got the right support.
Correct.
That's literally what happened. And then this other person who they say this and this, oh, they were sexually abused their entire lives. Oh, okay. But the thing is, no one tells the backstory to it. So if you had to explain it, I had to explain it to my mother.
Yeah.
I remember I was like, Mom, I want to go to therapy. I don't think I'm okay. The first time I said it actually was in matric. I was struggling. I was really, really struggling because there's so much pressure around matric. And it's like, what is this? Like, which one of your friends told you about this thing? You know, like, and the thing is, she didn't understand it because they've never been taught the languaging for it. It was only after I started explaining it better, where she could start seeing things in herself, things in her mother, things in different people, where she was like, oh. So even to this day, not even just with the previous generation, with our generation and the younger generation, there isn't enough focus on mental health education in schools to give us the right language around defining what it is that we feel. The truth is, for the most part, I read a stat last year that said companies overall, I think it costs companies like $3 billion to not take care of their employees' mental health because that person is not performing at their optimum. The chances of mistakes are like really high or whatever. But the thing about it is there hasn't been enough languaging around it. So even if you're trying to explain it to your mother, it's not that she does not know what it is or she's never felt it or she's never felt like she was at the point of not wanting to wake up in the morning because she couldn't do X, Y, Z for her children or even herself.
Yeah.
But there was never languaging around that. There was more of Vegezela, Bogoto, what. They were taught that suffering and enduring, that's a sign of a strong person.
Yes.
So even when they felt weak, they could not really define it because they don't live in a world that has capacity and space to provide a safe space for her to say, I'm not okay. I need help with X, Y, Z.
There's something that you said earlier on about how our society has been conditioned, or there's a level of acceptance around our circumstances that, guys, it's normal. I mean, our mothers went through it. Like, what makes you different? Why can't you do it? And I remember when, you know, I was about to give birth to my son, and right after I gave birth, how I struggled to just adjust. And I felt like they didn't get it. My mom didn't get it, or people around me didn't get it because, Nazi, you're not the first person that just gave birth. And there's a level of individuality around all of this that is just people don't get. That, yes, a lot of people have gone through this. Yes, a lot of people have children, but there's an individual journey. and there's something about me that I'm struggling with, despite the fact that there's many people that have gone through this. So I think that what you just said is really powerful, that, that level of acceptance from, whether it's from our moms having gone through something similar, but it is very, still very important for us to highlight those things. So, Shudu, we've talked about, overall mental health, you know, how it's been represented in our communities. But what are some of the practical things that we can do? I mean, you just touched on it. We can incorporate some things in our curriculum at schools, but what more can we do to bring more light, but also practically, how can we deal? How can we, yeah, what are some of the interventions that we can implement?
So my biggest thing is honestly mental health education. People fear what they don't know. Mm. Like people fear what they don't know. The fact that COVID and stats, like, I mean, in the UK, this was a stat in 2021. I don't know what it is now. Mm-hmm. After COVID, after the year of COVID, there was a study that was done that said there was the cases of depression and anxiety increased by 20% mm-hmm. in high school students. The survey was done there, and there were other stats around the world as well that spoke about the children that went into school like during that time mm-hmm. in grade 1 or 2 and had to wear masks, suffer from speech problems, and they don't know how to relate to children. There were so many stats that were done that for me, it's actually appalling that we have not integrated mental health education mm-hmm. into the curriculum, because if we want to destigmatize it, it starts with the next generation. Children teach their parents more than anything.
Right.
No, they will teach their parents, they'll teach their parents new words, like different things, like mm-hmm. that you thought I wouldn't know. And then they come and tell you about this new thing that's happening. So those are the best teachers. But over and above mental health education in general, mm-hmm. it's opening safe spaces such as these mm-hmm. to have open conversations to say that after I gave birth, I was not okay. And you mentioned something about you, this is your individual journey, mm. but understanding that people are different. Yeah. People have different stories. Right. People have different backgrounds. Yeah. People have different experiences. Mm. So to have an open, unjudgmental space to basically have these conversations, I kid you not, is the biggest thing you could ever do. Because I had a mental health show on Instagram called Mindful Mondays, and we received over 1 million viewers overall. Mm. But then every week it was an average of 40,000 people watching those videos, getting educated. Mm. And this was a number that SADC gave us, mm. but their number of calls doubled because of it, because people could actually say, me too. I was on a flight to Cape Town. Mm. And on that day, I was extremely exhausted. I had been working like no one's business. Yeah. I had just flown in from Kenya, landed at 2 a.m., checked into the hotel by the airport because I had an early flight to Cape Town to go work for my business mm. there in Cape Town. So I was exhausted, close to tears. Mm. In my personal life, I felt like I was getting nothing right. It was just a complete mess. Mm. And so I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay, let me just sleep. I'll feel better once I sleep. And then this guy is staring at me the whole time. I'm like, why is this guy staring at me? And then he walks to me. And then he says, I'm so sorry to disturb you. I know that you want to sleep. And this is just very weird. In 2021, I would watch your Mindful Monday shows because I was working. I was retrenched at this airline and I didn't have a job or an income for a year. And I had to move back in with my mother. So I was close to the edge. But I would watch, my mother would actually make sure that I watched those shows 7 p.m. every single night, because she knew that I needed a place where I didn't feel alone, because he's a man, where I didn't feel like there was something wrong with me for feeling this way. And he said it actually saved my life. It brought me to tears because we never recognize the importance of safe spaces. And then he said his mom has now passed, but he never thought he would get a chance to say thank you for creating that space. Mm. But it shouldn't only be that space. Mm. It shouldn't only be the space. It should be different spaces where when you ask someone how they are, have an extra 2 minutes to actually listen to how they really are. You know, we always expect, when I ask you how you are, you ask me. The expectation is to say, I'm good, thank you. But what if I'm not good? Mm. But then the thing about it is that we need to have uncomfortable conversations in order to have a world where mental health is not just like a privileged term. It's a term that everyone can use and understand that when I'm not okay, it's okay. I've got a community of people who I can speak to, who will make me and validate how I feel in that moment. So that's the other thing, creating safe spaces and communities where it's not just in silos. It's not just for people who can access Instagram, Spotify, but it's actually in mainstream media, mainstream communities where, like, being honest, like, yo, ma, I'm not good today, you know?
Yeah.
For moms that immediately want to fix it. But sometimes you listening to how I am on that day is literally the best thing you could ever do for me, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing is prioritizing the little things, you know, like the little things. There's, I had in the last month, actually the first quarter of 2024 has been extremely difficult for me, like from health challenges to like a lot of things are happening. Mm-hmm. Career-wise, things are good, but like a lot of things are happening where a lot of people wouldn't expect me to say I'm not good on this particular day, because why? You're always traveling to this place, that place. You have this, you have that. But that does not negate the fact that I'm not good. So the other thing is prioritizing the little things. What I started doing was just reading more. Mm-hmm. I read 2 books in 1 week and I was so proud of myself because those books helped me define something. I learned something new, but they helped me define something else about myself. Yeah. What is my why? Mm-hmm. I've always played around or toyed around with the idea of why, because other people are feeling the way that they do because they're living outside of their purpose and their why. So that book said, with the things that we do every single day, how do they contribute to our why? Because as soon as we deviate from that, that's when we encounter different things where we find ourselves in a loop, a spiral of being lost because we forgot our why. So things like that, reading, walking. I haven't been gymming much because I was in the hospital, but the gymming. But gym doesn't require you to have a gym membership. It's literally taking a walk.
Yep.
Taking a walk. It was something as simple as I was on holiday and I still wanted to work out. And I felt so good. I felt tired. I felt sore. But I felt so good after that. Playing games, you know, because that's a form of movement. There's a lady who said, move because you get to, not because you have to. Movement is a privilege. So moving and cooking, like 30 minutes. My therapist during COVID, she said, you know, sometimes waking up and making your bed is an achievement on its own. Mm-hmm. That's a little win. Mm-hmm. She's like, cooking, doing something for 30 minutes, taking a walk around your complex or down the street. That is a win on its own. Those are little wins that build up to bigger things. So you feel like I've accomplished something. I woke up this morning. I look great. I'm here. I feel good. You know, like basically manifesting good things in your life. And then you make a good cup of coffee or you have a great conversation and you feel like that's a win for me. Acknowledge those little wins, because for us, it feels like we need to buy a car or a house. Then that's when I'm going to celebrate my life. But I think more than anything, it's the little things.
And prioritizing yourself.
And prioritizing yourself, checking in with yourself, journaling, you know, like those things where you acknowledge the little wins as well. I'm so proud of myself. This is what I did, you know?
You know what? I'm so happy that you are also opening up the way you are, because that was another thing I was going to note. You said earlier on, it doesn't discriminate. It race, whatever, social class, it doesn't. Because literally people looking or probably listening to this, she's beautiful, she has a career, she's traveling the world. Why would she be depressed about? Why would she not be okay? There's a lot happening that you do not know, you know. And so I'm happy that you are sharing that part also to actually make people realize that actually also the fulfillment of a person does not rely only on material things. Mm-hmm. It does not. Mm-hmm. There are people that actually have all the money in the world and they're still not happy.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So before we continue, I just wanted to play a game with you, a very short game. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Don't think too much about it. 10 seconds and less. Okay. Okay. Who is your celebrity role model?
Celebrity role model? Ooh, that's a hard one. I guess Beyonce, because of her work ethic.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, her work ethic is second to none.
Wait, what was the recent...
Renaissance.
Yes, and the fact that she, I think she had an injury just before.
Any injury, yeah.
And she still pushed. Okay, yeah. I understand. Yep. Job you wish you had, but you know you're not qualified for?
A job I wish I had, but I know I'm not qualified. Being president, but I'm going to be qualified.
Oh, there you go. I love that. I was going to say, being a singer, but I know my butt cannot hold a note, but I still sing anyway. That it doesn't matter. Okay. Magazine cover you still want to grace?
British Vogue.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I can't wait for that. Best, foreign destinations you've traveled.
Best. Oof. That's a very difficult one, but one of my favorite places in the world is Bali.
I want to go to Bali.
Bali's honestly.
It's on top of my list.
Can I tell you, like, you can travel to a lot of fancy places.
Yeah.
But I'm a big energy person. Yeah, and yeah. In terms of energy, you land in Bali and you realize that you haven't been breathing for a long time. You're just like, it's honestly one of my favorite places.
When did you travel?
I traveled in 2018 and then I took my family there in 2019.
Okay, just for more confirmation, I want to go to Bali. Oh, but they're very expensive.
No, Bali is actually one of the cheapest travel destinations.
You think so? Okay, maybe I should plan it out more now.
No, if you plan it out in advance, the issue is people try to do things a week or a month before, and then you're very shocked at the prices. But the first thing about travel, the best travel tip I could ever give anyone, is that book flights even 12 months before, if possible.
Okay.
Because flights are the most expensive thing.
Yes.
The thing about Bali is that it's so affordable that once you have flights, everything else you can spend, I don't know what, but it's really, really affordable. I went there like with very minimal savings the first time I went there with my friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just spoke to me because I tried to plan it out like in a month or so. I was like, you know what? Maybe next time because it was so expensive. Okay. The last one is, this is getting too personal again. Biggest professional regret.
Biggest professional regret. Right now, I don't really have a lot, but maybe the times where I didn't put myself out there. Because what happens is there's an opportunity in front of you, and then you don't say, I want to do it, you know, because you're too, it's the imposter syndrome thing, because I can remember it. Like years back where, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention like company names or whatever.
Mention.
But in my first year of university, my marks were really good and I was approached by the Ellen Gray Foundation and they said, and I was super keen for it because you get to be a part of a huge network of people. Yeah. And they wanted me to just write something telling them about myself.
Sure.
But I stopped and I didn't write anything because I don't know what to say. I didn't know what to say about myself. Why do I deserve this opportunity for them to seek me out? Means I deserve this opportunity. And I remember as the years passed, I was like, oh, I should have done that. But there are other moments where luckily I've got a great team now that basically puts me out there. They will like say, we want this for her. We want this for her. And I was in a meeting last week, Friday, and her name is Saf. Like she was like there saying, we want this. We want this. We want this. And I was like, oh, like this is very big. And then he's like, oh, don't worry. We've already put her down for that, but we'll note that too and make sure that we put her down for that. But I was like, oh, all you have to do is just put yourself out there. So my biggest professional regret, I can't pinpoint one moment, but it's basically not putting myself out there enough.
Now, Shudi, before we go into the snack, I'm quite interested about your transition from being a student, and now being Miss South Africa. Yeah? You talked about you struggled, with anxiety, with mental health when you were in university and you went to see a therapist and all of that. Now I am thinking that transition from being a student to Miss South Africa, being exposed to millions, not thousands, millions of people, having their own opinion, probably who should have been Miss South Africa, how they should look like, and all of that. Was that hard for you?
It was, because I'm an introvert. Like, one of my favorite things is being at home with my book or like...
But let me put you up there. If you're an introvert, how did you find yourself in a space where you're going to compete for being Miss South Africa?
Yeah, I can tell you something. I've said it in maybe one other podcast. Education is not enough. Access to opportunities and access to networks is the real key to changing someone's life and economic empowerment, all of it. Because there are many educated people that don't have jobs. I graduated with a triple major, one of the most sought-out degrees in the world. And I could not find a job. So what I realized was, okay, I'm going to do my honors, yes, but I need access to networks, someone to introduce me and basically vouch for me in rooms. Right now, I don't have that, you know. So what happened was, first, I made a promise to my friend that I would enter Miss South Africa, and I keep my word.
Okay.
I didn't think I'd make it. But one of the reasons where I had to convince myself is that it was going to give me access to networks, access to opportunities. I didn't have to win Miss South Africa for people to know who I am. If I showed them who I am, someone out there, I believed it with all my heart, someone out there would know me and know about me enough to vouch for me in rooms, you know? So I basically like entered Miss South Africa, did the work that I did, because I was doing a lot of work during Miss South Africa platform as a finalist, getting donations for people in my community, you know, making sure that they have food, blankets, sanitary pads, stationery, all because I was a finalist. For me, even when I was on stage, I didn't expect to win. When I was on stage and they were announcing the top five, my name was the last one to be called. And I kid you not, I was shocked I was in the top five because I had already accepted that I was happy with top 10. I already done my best. When I got to top five, I was like, okay, at least let me say my final statement, which is about mental health, just to put it out there. But getting the crown was not part of the plan. And when I did, it was weird because it was almost like someone did this. But as an introvert, it was probably the hardest thing. I think as a finalist, I cried every day because I'm such an introvert. I don't force conversation. I will never force conversation. I don't need to be the loudest in the room. But now you're in spaces where you feel like you are in the shadows or you're not doing enough. So I'd cry because I felt like me being an introvert was not good enough because we live in a world that makes us aspire to extroverted ideals. So if you're an introvert, like you feel like you'll always be passed up in a room. And more often than not, I would speak to people, get to know people, but I'd never strive to be the loudest in the room. It was not my MO. So it was really hard. Like it was really hard. And even when I was in South Africa, it was even harder because I truly believe that if someone wants a picture, you know, ask someone's permission. If you want to hug someone or touch someone, ask for, like, say, man, please, you know, like there's nothing wrong with asking, but you'd have like, I remember there was this one incident where I was at an event and then this man said to me, he just started taking a picture. I didn't mind because it was the event.
Yeah.
And then he touched me. And then I said to him, you should ask before you touch someone.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you should be privileged that I'm eating.
And then I said to him,
because I'm not raised that way. I will speak my mind. And then I said, sir, try that again. Because that is basically touching someone without their permission is a little bit of harassment.
Yes.
So it was things like that where I would speak my mind and I would draw my boundaries. But then by the time I'm done with all of that, you question whether your boundaries in such a space makes you, you know, because if you know me well enough, you'll know that I don't have a rude bone in my body. But at the same time, I do advocate for consent in whatever space I am in. So it was hard being an introvert and having people say, we own you, having people like just basically speak to you anyhow because they know that you can't really defend yourself without people making assumptions. It was hard because for the most part, I've spent my life reading books and studying and now I'm catapulted into this incredible platform and I'm really privileged to be part of this platform. But at the same time, being an introvert, it's really hard in those spaces because you're not going to be like, you know, the loudest in the room. And then they'll be like, oh, asking my manager, is she okay? Yes, she's okay. She's just not, you know, she's not loud.
Yeah. And in such a situation, do you just ride it out or do you still keep firm on your boundaries and what you stand for?
I think in terms of the introverted thing, I had to work really hard to be extroverted because what I found was I didn't want to be labeled as weird or rude. So I'd have to like literally overdo it by trying to be like the most talkative person in the world. And it was hard because I was like, you know, if you just sit down with me, we could have the most beautiful conversation without forcing it.
Yeah.
But I realized that there's an expectation when you are in that platform to, you know, to go around and like make, even if a small talk, even if it doesn't make any sense, that's the expectation of it.
It takes a lot out of you.
It does. But then the other thing was, I found myself really enjoying the access that it gave me in order to reach the little children, in order to try to integrate mental health education into our curriculum. I failed, but at least I tried. But it just gave me access to spaces that I was very privileged to be in, and it changed my life. So there are no regrets, but it's just very difficult because for the most part, people don't really look at you as human. The boundaries that I did set though were, honestly, consent is so important. Yes. I don't care what platform I'm on. Yeah. You're going to respect me as much as I respect you. Mm-hmm. So that was like, honestly, the one boundary I was not willing to falter on.
Wow. I can imagine you literally going back to your hotel room or going back home and needing a couple of days just to recharge after all of that.
But you don't have a couple of days.
And that's the thing as well.
As my South Africa, you don't have a couple of days.
Gosh. Shudu, just before we close off, let's go to now the snack. We have black coffee with no sugar, no milk. What's the story behind it?
I don't like sugar at all since I was a child. My amazing grandmother, every time she'd come back from Joburg to Venda, one day she brought Cook Sisters. And she gave me Cook Sisters, and I remember, I didn't want to be weird, but I remember eating it, and like, I was like, what is this? Like, I've never liked sugar. The only place where you'll find me like having sugar is probably when I have that random craving once in a while for cake.
Okay.
Cause I was obsessed with cake, especially wedding cakes.
Yeah.
I'd go to people's weddings just to eat cake.
Okay.
So, even if I wasn't invited back in the village, you'd find me there just to eat cake. Like it was just that thing, but I've never really been a big fan of sugar. So with my tea, with my coffee, no sugar. Yeah. I barely drink cool drinks or sodas or whatever. So like sugar is like not a big thing for me. But the story behind coffee is that I never drank coffee my entire life. But when I was Mzese, and in general, I have never been a morning person ever since I was a child. And my great grandmother, bless her soul, Mwanzeru, she used to basically coddle me and basically feed into me sleeping and sometimes missing school. There was a time where I went to a church event with her that ended at 2 a.m. So it messed up my sleeping patterns. I was like 7 years old.
Yeah.
And I missed a week of school because I was struggling to wake up on time for school. And she would tell everyone, they called me Abby at home, like, Muricheni, let Abby sleep, you know? Yeah. And that happened for over a week. And my aunt was like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
and
you can't do that.
And thing is, my great grandmother was so strict and so scary. She's like tiny, but like, she's like, big force that no one could question what she wanted. So while I was resting in that week, they changed the school uniform. And one day I woke up and I opened the window because the school was right across my grandfather's house, and the school uniform had changed and the school was out. So I've never been a morning person. I was forced to be a morning person as in South Africa, and I'm still forced now because I'm an adult.
Yes.
But the only thing that can wake me up
is a coffee.
Even my manager would know, like, everyone knows, like, in the morning, I'm not human. If I don't have to talk, I don't like talking before like 10.
Okay.
Even that's pushing it, but like, I don't like talking before 12.
Okay.
But now I've been forced to be that person. So my partner, everyone in my life knows,
just give her coffee first.
Give her an oat milk cappuccino or a coffee.
Okay.
And.
But you did well today. Can I say that? With the coffee.
Cheers,
my friend. Thank you so much for coming. Now, let me tell you.
It's nice.
It is very nice. I don't want
that. But for me not to hold back,
I
literally had to have some coffee because I'm really not a morning person. If anyone ever meets me at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m., and I look like I'm sad or I'm angry, it's because... For the most part, it is because I really should be in my bed.
No, can I tell you something? Also, but then obviously I'm at the extreme where I'm bubbly and everything like that. When you walked in, hey, Shuru, hello. I'm like, Is she awake? Bring her coffee now. But Shirley, thank you so much for this. You are everything that I thought you were and more. Honestly, I was looking forward to this conversation. I remember when the team confirmed that you were coming, or actually when it was like, oh yeah, we might interview, would you like to interview Shirley? I was like, that will be the highlight of my entire year. Okay. That will be the highlight of my entire year. Thank you so much for all that you do. I think the biggest thing also for me personally, when I following the work that you've done, is what you represent, the representation of what you stand for. Literally, when my niece and every young child, when they look at you, it's like, yeah, I see myself there. Because she did it, right? So that's why I'm a biggest fan of all the work that you do with young kids, with your books, with your advocacy. May you go into higher heights. Honestly,
thank you.
Whatever the team is thinking of, beyond your wildest imaginations, beyond what you can ever think, may that be where you are going. I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Fun fact, my team is called Beyond, but,
right.
Yeah. Thank you so much for creating a safe space for us to have this conversation and being very, there's a kind way in which you conduct interviews. A lot of people have interviews or ask questions for the sake of getting answers and for the sake of just getting like a scoop. But it's really nice to have a conversation where you just find yourself opening up regardless of what was asked. So thank you for that
too. Thank you for saying that. Guys, that is where we leave it off. Thank you so much, for joining us, and thank you so much for tuning in. Please find this podcast, or this episode rather, on YouTube or wherever you find your podcast. This has been a collaboration between DW, Jacaranda FM and East Coast Radio. Until next time, my name is Nozivele Kamgana Mayaba. Thank you so much for joining us.